Okay. First of all, just kind of like to thank Bridger for the opportunity to come to speak with you. I'm going to kind of revert back to my high school ag teaching days of 26 years. And 2 weeks ago, I was on the beach of Tulum, Mexico, and drinking a margarita, snorkeling. And I woke up this morning and I realized it was 110 degrees difference. And so from there, when I got back, I went to the Colorado Farm Show. And yesterday afternoon, I was in Kearney, Nebraska at the Mid-America Alfalfa Expo. So I really struggled on, do I do a PowerPoint or do I just kind of share with you what I picked up the last, actually, since Tulum? Because there we were in the reception line, and the guy behind me was a retired businessman from California. And these are two odd job careers, I realize that, but he decided to take up being a farrier, shoeing horses. So I asked him, give me a report of California drought, and it was not very pretty, pretty ugly. So he said there's a lot of cattle moving out, people are selling horses, and we're a country, a state that has $45 billion worth of specialty crops. If you like pistachios as well as I do, we may not be able to afford them next year, and that is going to be a trickle-down effect. So that's kind of where my program, I'm going to present some of my information. And then as a teacher, I always found the best person to teach other ag teachers was a fellow teacher. And so I've asked David Hinman, who is a producer from Wheatland, to come in and share with you some of his experiences of producing top quality hay, and specifically to address the opportunities in the export market. So I'm going to hand the microphone off to him, and then we will he'll finish up for me. So my portion of this is going to be pretty short. I also invited a college student I took back to World Dairy Expo with me 2 years ago, who won second place in the University of Wyoming's Business Entrepreneur 30K contest. And his whole project was on studying the feasibility and the opportunity to develop a hay compressing business in Wyoming to meet export demands. And so that's kind of what Kyle and David were going to do. But actually, I texted Kyle and said, you know, as cold as it is, and you're in Laramie, you're a college student, maybe you just better just stay there where you're safe and warm. So he's not going to show up. But really, really great young man. So some of the things I'm going to share with you, I've already made kind of a mental tease activity here for you to do. When I was teaching, I always gave my students pop quizzes, and I thought, well, that isn't quite right. I couldn't give you a pop quiz because this is our first presentation. So I call it just a mental tease. And there's some questions on here that I would like you to answer and then share and interact with what you think and what I think, what I hope you think is the correct answer. Before I start, I would like to develop this premise about marketing. And that is, you do two things, and you've listened to great speakers this morning and today, new technology, whether it be equipment, whether it be seeds. And yesterday at the Mid-America Alfalfa Expo, there was a topic on seed selection and variety selection. And the guy, his first picture he had up here was a 1952 Super M tractor, a farm all. And he asked, how many of you are still maybe using this piece of technology in putting up your hay? And lo and behold, there are a few hands that went up. And he said, so let me ask you, are you still using the same variety that you used back in 1952? And some of them, you know, maybe. So that's where I think you as producers need to really, and Anwar hits it right on the head. I mean, there are so new varieties out there. There's companies that are spending millions of dollars, and David will share with you some varieties that he has that are making worlds of difference. So, you know, the guy shared with, you know, where do you get your seed? Well, I just went to my neighbor, and what he planted, I'm planting. Or I went in the co-op, and they said, well, hey, we got a pallet of four seeds here. We're going to have them on discount, 50% off. So that's not the way to select your variety of seeds, believe me. So anyway, some things that I would just like to encourage you to do, and that is, if you're whatever you're going to adapt to, new machinery, new variety, you know, pivot irrigation, sub irrigation, whatever, make sure you do some market research, because whatever you do has got to be, has to come out on the other end. There has to be a market for it. And so if it's, you know, raising a new variety or going from beans and corn, like your area, to totally alfalfa, the first thing that I would encourage you to do is make sure you have a market for that hay and where it fits into the niche market. Because otherwise, if you say, well, my neighbor just got a big square baler, so I want a big square baler. My neighbor just got a new dew point machine that you can bale hay during the day and meet export markets, so I think I'm going to do that. My neighbor just got a new pickup, so I think I better get one. So make sure you have a market and you know what that market is. And then the other thing that I always encourage people to do is make sure you know what your break-even is. If you don't know what your break-even is, then marketing, a new marketing strategy doesn't make any difference, because you don't know what a good price is from not making a good price. And especially in the cereal grains. Unfortunately, hay is not a commodity that is traded on any exchange. You know, hay is a fickle commodity. Everybody has a different opinion. You know, if you want to get into the export markets, it's got to be different than what you sell to your cow-calf producers. In Wyoming, our number one cash crop is forages. It's not corn, it's not malt barley, it's not edible beans, it's forage. Now, whether that forage is just sitting in a stack on your ranch or on somebody's ranch and farm, or it's actually going down the road, yeah, that's our number one crop. And so where are the markets that we can get into? So anyway, here's some questions just kind of share with you, and I, you know, always try to kind of interact. First one, which of the following agriculture industry drives hay prices in Wyoming? Which one drives your, and how many, I assume there's not too many producers in here, right? Raise your hand if you're selling hay. Okay? Not yet, huh? Okay, so what drives your market? If you say the horse industry or the cow-calf or Colorado dairy cheese factory, I think you're missing the mark. You need to keep your eyes on the dairy industry, because in a long sense, the dairy industry sets the tone for hay prices, whether you're selling it on an RFV point system or it just comes a report that I submitted or gave to you out of the Hoyt Hay Report out of California. You need to use that. If you're selling your hay just on the cow-calf industry based that market, then the cow-calf guy is not going to give you a very good price, I guarantee you. And whatever you do, don't undersell yourself. And whatever you do, be very cautious. And I hate to use the word broker, but these guys are in the business to do what? Make money. And how are they going to make money? The truck driver has to deliver the product somewhere. He's going to cut his bone. You know, he's going to work with you as much in. And, you know, I've called trucking companies and I said, can you give us a backhaul price? And boy, they hate that term. You know, it costs the same to drive that truck this way as it does that way. You know, but if you know some special situations that might give you a special rate, maybe there. But the only way these brokers are going to make money is that, you know, they buy it from you at this price and then they turn around and take it down the road and sell it at this price. So, you know, be very careful with that one. So, dairy industry drives our prices. How many consecutive years have Wyoming hay producers won the commercial hay contest at the World Dairy Expo Super Bowl Forage Challenge? I quit teaching high school ag in 08. I've been at the business almost 7 years, and I've taken the forage program over. I've had it for six, and I know the year before I came there, they won it, so it's been seven consecutive years. And David has been probably four of those years that he's won that. So the neat thing about that is it gets your name out there. You also get an opportunity to meet a lot of people. If you ever want to go with me to Madison, to the World Dairy Expo, to find out what it's like to meet Chinese, Asian, world delegations looking for hay, I'd be more than glad to give you a week road time. And, you know, sometimes I can fly a person out or they can fly back. They don't have to spend the whole week there, but it's a whole week. but it's a really good insight to the value of Wyoming hay. We have a very unique product. It's high elevation, low humidity. We can put it up excellent. People come in, and I took some of David's hay back one year. I pulled it out of the baler. I just threw it on the trailer, took it back, and honest to God, and we posted it right by the door of our tent, and the guy comes in and said, "Do you serve salad dressing with that?" I mean, that's just how unique that hay is. And when you get east of here, you know, I've always thought it would be really neat. And when I was teaching, I'd have my FA kids, we did exchange programs with other eastern states. They'd come out, we'd go back there. And it's always intrigued me to, you know, I'd like to take some Wyoming producers, go out to Iowa or Illinois, leave them there for a week, and say, okay, you have so many days to put up so many acres of hay, get after it. And then bring those guys to Wyoming, and I guarantee you, they'll probably be at the lake or at North Platte River fishing while you're out there pulling your hair out. And I can only think that they'd probably say, you know, they'd call you up and say, you know, that swather and baler yours I just sold, it just grow soybean and corn and forget that hay stuff. So, but it is a challenge back there. Okay, given the current hay market fundamental news, where do you anticipate hay prices to be this year? Anwar? Oh, the number 2-7. Seven consecutive years that I know of. So we've won it, you know, ever since I've been involved, we've won it every year. And that's a huge dividend, and Dave can attest to that. Okay? So where do you think hay prices are going to be?
A.
Okay? Anybody have any other feeling? Dave?
I think they're going to be higher.
I will have a tendency to probably agree with you, mainly because you got to keep an eye on what's happening in California. The other thing is, keep in mind, and this is information I picked up from Colorado Farm Show, is that are we seeing an abundance of hay acres going into alfalfa this year? Well, we don't know yet. The only thing I can say, visiting with the Next Grow and the WL and all the alfalfa breeders, they have sold quite a bit of alfalfa seed. Now, maybe it's just waiting, but as far as I'm concerned, our acres are down, our demand is up, and it depends on what happens in California. And the nice thing about that, exports have really increased. So the demand is there.
So maybe the question I should ask is, how are you framing this year in your mind on this question? I mean, if you're already seeing cheaper prices right now, this is what I consider this year.
Yeah.
You know, talk about in the next 12 months.
You know, based on the CSU economist info session that I set in at the Colorado Farm Show, and everybody that I set at the reception table at Mid-America Alfalfa Expo, those guys are Nebraska producers. Every one of them at that table just went out and bought $2,200 bred heifers. Okay? So, you know, the beef industry is going to recuperate, and they're going to have some hay. Now, to what extent those Texas producers are going to go back into business, we don't know. I was at a UNL workshop in Kimball, Nebraska, on ranch profitability, and their economists couldn't give me that. I asked them that, you know, of what percent of those ranchers that went out of business, Texas, biggest beef-producing state in the United States, what percent are those going to actually go back to producing cattle again? And she couldn't give me that. But, you know, the only way that I see that hay prices are going to go down is, you know, California's going to have to get out of a severe drought. And if you see a whole lot of acres of alfalfa go in this spring, then hay prices could go down. But until then...
In the Nebraska system, we don't think that's going to happen because of the corn issues.
Yeah.
Right now, corn is out competing the hay acres.
Right.
So as far as alfalfa, I would agree to a certain number.
Yeah.
For cow-calf producers in the western Nebraska, at least, those prices have already dropped significantly.
Yeah, and you're talking about two different industries, two different markets, two different, you know, there's a whole, that's the problem with hay. It's not like U.S. wheat, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, you know, the kind of hay that you want is totally different than the kind of hay that Dave sells to his Amish people in Kelowna, Iowa. And believe me, that you know, somebody will. Okay, well, we'll get back to my quiz here. I'm glad to see it opened up a really good discussion. That's what I like, is interaction. Okay, since 2010, how much has the forage export markets increased in U.S. forages, okay? I'd like to say it's increased 19%, but it has increased 14. Maybe between 14 and 19, and it just keeps growing. Realize in United Arab Emirates, I went to Marina del Rey 3 years ago. They invited me to go down there because the excellencies were coming in. They're saving all their natural water to grow human food, not forages. So, they're sitting under a lot of oil. They've got lots of money, and they're big-time players. And so they have an opportunity. Now, what is that going to do to your prices here? If you were selling corn or soybeans and you understand basis, what it's going to do is make the basis stronger. It's going to make the demand locally stronger because now that hay, that good quality hay or that hay, is moving out. And David will address that. Okay, which alfalfa cutting is the export market demanding the most for their needs? They don't like rabbit hay, so you figure it out. They want first cutting hay, and they like it coarse, but there's four things that you've got to have. You can't have any cow turds. It's got to be green, excellent leaf retention, and moisture cannot be more than 12%, because you're going to put it in a metal container with no fans, and put it on the ship, and when it gets there, if it's got any extra moisture, it's going to turn into a slime ball, and they won't accept it. So, that is a real, real tight type of product. And, maybe a lot of our Wyoming producers who put up round bales, who feed cows, maybe they don't want to get into that market. That's fine. But, I just came from the Mid-America Alfalfa Expo. There's a lot of Nebraska alfalfa producers that are very interested in what Dave's going to share with you and what the opportunity is there. Okay, in your opinion, what will be the most significant aspect that will impact agriculture in the future? And what I would like to do is just have each person go around the room and quickly give me your response.
Federal government.
Federal government, yeah. That was a unanimous thing. John?
Technology.
Okay.
Export,
okay.
Weather,
yeah.
I agree, weather.
Yeah.
California.
I go with technology.
I was going to say technology, too.
Okay. Scott?
Me? I have two that I like.
Good.
One is the age of our producers, and the other one is competition for land use.
Yeah.
I'd say weather.
Okay.
Consumer perception.
Yeah.
Based on the conversation I had with the people at Mid-America just a few days ago, this is Western Nebraska, their biggest issue is water. They are being really restricted, and that may fit into the weather issue too. So, pumping underground water, adjudication, lawsuits, you've been down that road, heard that before. So, you can't produce 200, you can't produce corn and soybeans without water. And, luckily they've got rain out there, but we in certain areas, so technology with circle pivot irrigation, soil moisturing is going to be a big deal. Okay, the other part on the handout here is market fundamentals. I always deal a lot. Market fundamentals always impact the market. So I just thought I'd share with you some market fundamentals that I've picked up on the last two crunches. And that is milk prices. Keep an eye on milk prices and cheese prices. As we only have, 5,000 dairy cows in the whole state, and 4,000 of them are down in my county. But, that sets the price for, and we want to talk about the dairy quality hay. So if you're not in the dairy quality hay market, I guess then that's moot to you. Do what you can. In order for hay prices to drop, there needs to be a significant number of acres planted in alfalfa in 2014. So come 2000 spring, when everything's planted, and if you keep your ears to the websites and news and market reports, and if we've seen significant increase in acres, then hay prices will probably go down. Export forage markets will help establish strong basis for hay sales. I already said that. U.S. beef rebuilding could have an impact on the demand for hay. We just don't know. You know, I'd love to get back in hay business. I own a little, well, I grew up in a ranch southeast Montana, and so we dared not call it farms there, but I only have 520 acres, so it's kind of a hobby farm. And I used to ran some cows, but I had to sell them because of the drought, but I'd love to get back in them, but, you know, the prices don't fit into my budget. So California drought could have a huge impact that may impact the number of, and let me just give you some significant figures here. These are some off of a website I took. A lot of cities in California are restricted to 110 gallons a day for water. So that means this family can only take a shower every other 2 days. Can you imagine taking only a shower every other 2 days? I know my daughter never could. So, I mean, that we don't understand that. And just like Bridget said, we haven't seen the impact yet. Governor Brown has declared the state of California in emergency status. Sierra Madres only have 12% of normal snowpack, and Dave just said they were getting some snow now, which is God blessing. Major food processor in Tulare, California will only employ 600 people as compared to 3,500 in a normal year. If you're not putting up hay, you're not buying baling twine. If you're not buying baling twine, you're not buying your equipment. So if we think food prices are high, wait until if that drought keeps going, we're all going to be complaining. Galt Livestock Auction is averaging 4,000 head per day, whereas compared to last year at this time, they would average 450. And I've seen some pictures of California. So the other one I just attached is what are some opportunities that you can do to get involved in a marketing potential, and that is, I would say, set goals for producing your hay. And I'm talking about quality related. I'm not talking so much quantity. And I realize that, you know, round bales are great. And, you know, if you bale hay like my brother-in-law in southeast Montana, he drives me nuts. You know, it doesn't matter if it's 7 o'clock in the morning or 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock. He's round balers out there running. And my son used to go up and help him put up hay, and he'd bring some hay back. And honestly, he raised show pigs, and the only reason some of those bales were used was for bedding for sows, because it had cheatgrass, crest wheatgrass, and what little alfalfa there was no leaves. And so, I mean, we had show steers, and I sure as heck wasn't going to feed that to him. So, you know, the difference between 140 RFV hay and 200, you know, if you're selling by points and it's dairy quality, that's about $66 per value. So if you've got a circle of that, 125 acres, you know, just the difference in that value is, I just put some numbers right around $44,000. So, you know, when I was teaching, I told my students it costs the same. You have your fixed cost, your land, your labor, your machinery, your fuel. Now, the variable costs are, should you put herbicide on? Should you fertilize? And those questions there. But, you know, it's the same as producing crappy hay as it is good hay. And so why not produce good hay? Because you've got the investment. And so it's just a matter of timing and energy and desire to produce a quality product. And I better hurry up so I can save some time for you, Dave. Know your market and what the strongest demand for hay are. Participate in your county, state, and even national contests. Just like Scott said, Natrona County is trying to revamp their local hay contest. I've attached a copy of the Super Bowl in Madison, Wisconsin. And what I do is I take hay back there from the state fair. So all you got to do is bring hay to the state fair, enter it in the form, and I put it on a trailer and I take it back and I have your name on it. If it's one of the top five alfalfa grass samples, I pay for the entry into that contest and I pay shipping. And Dave can tell you what kind of benefits you get from that, all right? Because you get quite a few. And then improve your knowledge of variety selection and management of all these new forages. And other than that, I'm going to turn it over to Dave, and he's going to share with you what he's been researching and the opportunities that
I think Wyoming is on the verge of capitalizing.
Everybody hear me? I'm a producer down in Wheatland, Platte County. I grew up in western Nebraska. A little bit about me. Where I grew up down there, hay was kind of a second crop. We used it as a filler. We raised corn, beans, sugar beets. Any water we had left, we put up the hay, and that was for our cows. A lot of times we put up hay in loaves, we put them up in round bales, we sold it to the feedlots, whatever. I moved up to Wheatland, I kind of got into sugar beet business a little more, and then as I learned a little bit more about our factory in Torrington, things didn't go quite the way I wanted to, so I got into the hay business. And I learned how to put up quality hay. Watching the neighbors around Wheatland, in Nebraska we didn't do that, but in Wyoming they put up quality hay. We baled at night, we baled early in the mornings. We learned how to put up really good quality hay. We started entering some hay in the contest, and we ended up doing pretty good. I didn't go back to the shows right at first. I just sent the hay back with Scott, and then also with Don as he came along. And the more they talked about it, and the more I thought, well, I ought to go back there and just see the people that are coming into that show. It's a World Dairy Show. And so I started 3 years ago going back. And the first thing I noticed as we were in the Wyoming hay tent, Wyoming sets up a tent, like Don said, he takes back probably 40, 50 samples of hay besides what he enters in the contest. So everybody that's coming into that show gets a chance to look at Wyoming's grass alfalfa, grass, alfalfa, any of the hay that goes to the state contest ends up in that show. And you have all kinds of people, they all come in and they can't believe the hay, because if you go back there, the hay is either brown, moldy, or doesn't smell right, or it's baleage. A lot of them put up baleage back there. But nobody puts up hay like what we do out here in the West, with our altitude. And through that, the last couple years, we've had a lot more Chinese people coming in, Saudi Arabian people coming in, all wanting Wyoming hay. And I got to visiting with him a year ago, and I was talking to Kyle. He went back 2 years ago, and he did a kind of a study on what it would cost to ship hay out. And I thought about it, and I thought, I got such a good market. Through my entries in the show, I'm sending probably 70 semi-loads of alfalfa into the Kelowna area for Amish. Now I'm also sending hay into the northern Iowa, and then also some into Wisconsin. We have sent hay as far away as Pennsylvania. And that freight, like Don said, is a backhaul, so they're bringing out new machinery out of Iowa. They're taking hay back $1,000 a load. So they're getting hay delivered into there for around $340 a ton, which is good quality hay. They want 200 plus relative feed value. Some of it's close to 300. But then I was back at the show, and I had the Chinese come in, and they wanted to know, how are we going to get this hay? And I thought, what kind of quality of hay do you want? We want roughage hay. We don't want this fine hay, but we like the looks of it. We want the leaves attached. And I said, okay, what, 150? 150, 160 relative feed value. Same thing you're buying for your cows. And so I got to calling around with connections I knew through the Union Pacific Railroad and also Burlington Northern Railroad. What do you think it costs to ship a container of hay from Cheyenne, Wyoming to Shanghai, China? 22 ton, 40-foot container, brought to Cheyenne, loaded with hay, 22 tons, what they want in it. They would pick it back up, take it to Denver, put it on the intermobile rail, take it to Long Beach, California, put it on the ship, take it to Shanghai. $4,000. Anybody else? $3,008. That's taking the container, bringing it to me, loading it with hay, taking it back. If I send a load of hay to Pennsylvania, it costs me $2,500. For that same load. If you figure out 22 ton of hay, the freight's $136 from Cheyenne, Wyoming to Shanghai, China. That hay in Shanghai, China is worth $480 a ton. So you tell me why hay prices might not go up. You've got to get it compressed and into that container is all you got to do. If you go to Saudi Arabia, it costs $2,000 more, but also the price is about double what it is there in China. Japan's another one. China 3 years ago bought 30,000 tons of hay. Last year they bought 700,000 tons. And most of it come out of California, Arizona, Utah, New Mexico. That hay is not going to be there this year. They're already contacting us wanting to know if they can get hay out of Wyoming, Colorado, Nebraska. Utah sends a lot of hay. There's an intermobile loading site there in Salt Lake City. So you have one in Salt Lake and one, you have one in Denver. The Denver one hasn't been used to ship hay yet, but it will be for very long. I guarantee you what the price is, what they look like. China's, like I said, China, Japan, all those countries over there are changing their systems, the irrigating, all for domestic food, and they're wanting to buy all the roughages, and they figured out that we've got good quality roughages over here, so they're after them. As far as, I don't know how many of you know about genetics and stuff, I do a lot of experimenting with putting up little bales. I put up a lot of big square bales and also round bales, and I've even started trying some baleage and doing some tests on those. The test on my baleage is unbelievable as far as the quality of the hay, because you're taking it off quicker, you're not losing any of the leaves. When the feed value of it, I don't know if anybody's ever fed baleage out in Wyoming, but it is some tremendous feed. So I think there's some of that may end up going that route out here also, because you're able to get an almost an extra cutting of hay by doing that, taking that hay off just a few days earlier. Like I said, I do a lot of research with the different companies. As far as entering the hay shows, if I enter the show and I win first prize, say $1,500, a lot of these seed companies will double that as premium back if I use their varieties, besides give you the seed to plant. So it's an opportunity for any producers, if they want to get involved in, you know, raising. We can raise quality anywhere in Wyoming. You can raise quality hay that'll go back there and just, I mean, it'll kick butt back there. So, but anyway, the opportunities, and it's going to be a world export market. It's not going to be a Wyoming. You know, we've seen a lot of hay move from Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, all the way down to Texas and down that way before too. And it's going to go right on overseas too, right out of our area just as much as it will out of California, especially with the water shortage they have out there this year. It's something that's going to happen.
You know, you see a lot of hay in Washington, central Washington and western Washington. And there's a lot of those hay shipping companies that are all Chinese signage now.
Yep.
Everything is Chinese and they're just massive. Warehouse.
And I've been talking to Maxim and Evergreen. I don't know if you watch the rails go by, you see those containers, and those are the names on there. Those guys handle that freight from when they pick it up to when it's delivered, and you pay one price. And so it's easy to work with them. You don't have to worry about, you know, talking to those other people. It's just a matter of getting a deal done through a broker. You do have to go through a broker.
Let me ask you your perspective on something. I'll give you a little background first. When I produced hay in Colorado along in Arkansas, we were selling our hay 240-280 to horse people and then selling our lower quality hay to the neighbors. And we started moving from small bales with the horse people to the big squares and just teach them how to use them, because we could put it up cheaper, faster, added another half cutting, we lost less leaf, we didn't have to wait for as much moisture
at exactly
2 in the morning, and we still kept the leaf. What's your experience with this foreign export thing as far as the format of your hay?
Well, I've got some brochures from them, the compactors. They actually cut the big squares, and then it presses them and ties them. This Hunter Wood Technologies out of Alberta, Canada, they'll come down, set up the machine. They'll do cost deals on them and everything else. I like the big squares. That's what I send back to the Amish. They no way wanted them at first. I said, I'll send you some back. You try feeding them and see how you like them. What I had to do was make them shorter because they were too heavy. They didn't have the equipment to unload them. They had to go borrow it from their neighbor, and they hate borrowing equipment from their neighbors back there. So I had to make them shorter so they weren't, especially when you get third and fourth cutting, you know, weighing 2,500 pounds.
And we did the same problem with the horse people went to the 3x3 bikes.
Yep.
Because they had 15 wheel wells in their little Toyota truck. You just drop them in there and they just slide them out. But it was a learning curve because they were.
And that's what this was too. But like I said, I'm sending them 70 semi-loads a year of 4x4s now, and they used to all be little bales.
So we cut our cost from $29 a ton down to $16 a ton and added 1.5 of cutting by going to the big square.
Same thing. And you can do the same thing with baleage.
Are they compressing the 3x3x8s too?
Yep, you can take any size bale, even little bales, and compress them and tie them.
They press the whole container full?
It's all pressed, but it's like a 60-pound bale.
Oh, yeah.
It's all cut. So it pushes it through a set of knives, it cuts it, it wraps it, bale, and then, it's quite a deal. Now, I've been using a bale bearing, which picks up 21 little bales, ties them together, and I was trying to figure out a way to press those and not go to something like these big compresses to be able to put that into
those Kronberg balers.
I've seen those, too.
I don't think you can get the weight in a 40-foot container. You need the tonnage. But there's all kinds of new things going to happen out there. And a Like I said, I think the hay's cheap right now because you have a lot of hay that was put up, and that's in my area too, but it hasn't dropped as much as what, you know, they're buying hay delivered into Wheatland for $150 a ton. Yeah. But the hay these guys want isn't dairy quality hay. It's cow hay. You know, 150, all it has to do is be green and you know, halfway put upright. Anyway, I test all my hay, and you know, I have circles. I test every cutting. The test, and I went to a seminar down there in Colorado at their farm show, and they had Ward, or the guy from Weld County, come in and talk about it, and taking a bale and taking 20 core samples out of it and have 20 different results. And so it's hard to tell, but you need to know what you're going to market, you know, and what you're buying. Even if you're buying hay, you need to sample it so you know how to feed it. It's going to take more or less protein or whatever.
The hay show at the Colorado State Fair for 10 years, and I never entered it because it was considered a conflict of interest.
I lived down at Rocky Ford for a year and sold bales over to Walsenburg, so I know exactly where you're coming from, but I couldn't take the Arkansas River water deal. That was enough to kick us out of there. So, but yeah, I farmed down there. We were in the Cantaloupe, right in that area down there south of Rocky Ford, and we had a big ranch we'd bought. And my dad and we were down there for a few years, and then they went under that river flow water and irrigating it all year long. And I don't know if anybody's out here, but you break the ice to irrigate because you pre-irrigate stuff, and then you plant it, and then you don't have any water in summer, and you watch it burn up anyway. So it's quite an experience down there. But
so is the Department of Ag going to try to promote this export potential further?
You mean the Wyoming Business Council? So what we can do is, because the Swan Ranch is located in Cheyenne, it's a city industrial park, we have business-ready grants that can qualify through the city of Cheyenne to be given to a company or a corporation, or I don't know if I use the word co-op, but an individual.
Partnership
to build a building, to put in a compressing unit. And so what Dave and Kyle have researched is that, you know, I think the wheel is starting to turn, and just coming from the Mid-America, visiting with those producers, they're even, you know, probably just as more landlocked than we are, but they were very interested in, you know, what might, because I mean, they can just haul it to Cheyenne. That's the other thing that, you know, it's the reason why we don't have a USDA inspected meat processing facility in Wyoming, is because we can't feed the animal. Well, if this goes in, we're gonna have to feed the animal. I mean, but the nice thing about it, first cutting hay, the big things that you're gonna have to be careful with are weeds.
Yep.
And other grass. They're pretty touchy on that, but you know, I mean, that first cutting hay, I mean, if you put it upright, you know, like I say, I told Dave the other day at Colorado Farm Show, I think, you know, rather than wait until we're behind the eight ball and we look around and think, geez, you know, maybe we should do something here. Maybe it's time to get moving and see what.
Well, I know Bailey Farms has bought hay out of Wheatland and taken it to Salt Lake. It's already went over there. Well, yeah, we've had hay out of Platte County go to Saudi Arabia. I know that.
Well, 3 months ago, I had a visit with one of the reps from Burlington Northern, and they were looking for new enterprises because they had a 30% decrease in the number of trains hauling coal.
Yeah, there you go. I mean,
and Burlington, I'll tell you, is a third cheaper than the UP. The price I give you is quoted on the UP.
Yeah.
And I'm still working, which is funny. I called the UP, so who do I get? I get a gal out of Florida. She does all the logistics on the hay deal. So I call Burlington, I get one out of Canada. So it's, you know, they're there, they're here, whatever, but they put the numbers together and they know the connections and they know how to do it all. So it's interesting how they work those. But
well, if we could talk the train company into backhauling hay from farther east as they come back across with empty coal trains.
They can't put it on the coal though. But you see, every time you see those cars, those flatbeds are all loaded with those containers. They got to get them back somehow.
Yeah, what I've heard is that for all the containers that come over to the United States from the Asian countries, they're full of technology and things that we buy. And was that you that was saying that? and only one out of 10 is full going bad.
It is
bad. I mean, it's not very many, so. The other thing I just want to throw a pitch for is that with Dr. Islam and University of Wyoming and extension agents in each county, we have been doing a Wyoming 4-H field day last 2 years, and so we've been at a request to go out to Bridger and Hudson's backyard. So we're gonna, I guess, go to Farson, and Dave has invited a Canadian compressor company to come down.
Yeah, they'll come down and speak if we want, you know, if you guys want to listen, or, and like I said, they've got some used ones they're taking out, they guarantee. You can go on YouTube, I can give you the email deal, and watch the compressors work. They're almost all automatic. I mean, it's pretty simple. They just, you take the, yeah, it just pushes the hay through, cuts it, and then it goes in and ties it, and just, it comes right back out. We were looking at something that didn't disturb the hay very much. A lot of those disturb the hay, and then they put them back together. And we were trying to get something to actually just cut it, tied it back, compressed it, and go on.
You realize this is kind of a double-edged knife because some of us are hay producers and cattle.
Well, I am. I got 250 cows of my own, too. A lot of the dairies have already come out to New Mexico already, and more of them are leaving. I was out in Tulare last year at that show, and a lot of that ground, in fact, almost all the dairies we talked to were looking at shutting down and moving because they were going to almond trees or pistachios or something like that. I mean, that is the big, and they're exporting all those. Those are all exports.
Yeah,